Welcome to Cardiovascular Matters. Whether you are looking for answers for yourself or someone you love, we are here to give you the best information available. Each week, the founder of Cardiovascular Institute of the South, Dr. Craig Walker, and medical device sales veteran, Terry Roberts, discuss the causes, symptoms, treatment, and prevention of health-related issues stemming from cardiovascular disease. Now here's your hosts, Dr. Craig Walker and Terry Roberts.
Hey, welcome back to Cardiovascular Matters. You know, the premise of this podcast is to provide more time with the doctor. And we're lucky to have the world-renowned cardiologist, Dr. Craig Walker, to spend time with us and explain the various illnesses and things that we're going to go through, but give it to you in such a way that you can understand what's going on, understand the treatment, see what's available out there, and then and get help for yourself or your loved one. So please tune in and listen as we tackle these topics here at Cardiovascular Matters. Thank you. Okay. Hello, Dr. Walker. We've spent a number of our podcast sessions on venous disease and how it's treated. We wanted to just kind of finish off this this dive into venous disease with how patients are treated post-procedure and what are the steps and the way that you ensure that they're going to get a good outcome once they leave the office.
Sure, Terry. That's very interesting, you know, and a very important part. Remember, we talked about different kinds of vein disease. We talked about obstructive vein disease, where the big veins in the abdomen, the inferior vena cava, or the iliac veins may have been compressed or may have webs. Those are the main drains of the leg. And if those are obstructed, we open those veins. Mm-hmm. And we typically open those veins with a balloon and a stent. Now, we do that by sticking one of the big veins in the leg and going through the area of obstruction with a soft wire. Over that, we advance the balloon or the stents, and we place those. Now, the recovery for this is relatively quick. Okay, there certainly we've made a venous stick. We don't want the patient to bleed because in this case, we're making a little bit bigger hole in the vessel than we would for other forms of treatment. Veins are not under high pressure like arteries, but they still can bleed. And so we have after the procedure, we watch the patient for several hours. And then after that, the patient may experience, in certain cases, back pain. And the reason for that is these iliac veins that we're stretching are rest against the backbone. Mm-hmm. And so as we stretch the vein, it pushes on the backbone, it pushes on the artery that's compressing it. And so patients may experience some back pain. Most of the time, it's like a backache, not a severe backache typically, and most of the time it lasts less than a week. And typically I tell my patients to take anti-inflammatory medicines, but I have had a patient in my career that had pain that lasted for almost a month. Again, it was more of a nagging pain, nothing more than that. And in that patient, I gave an injection of steroids, and then that pain abated at that point.
Okay.
So that's if we have iliac issues. Now, when we have clot in legs, and those patients, by the way, if we place a stent, those patients need to be on what we call antiplatelet drugs for at least 3 months, mm-hmm. and preferably more. And those drugs would be like an aspirin a day, and Plavix, which is another antiplatelet agent. After that, we can typically take them off of those agents because the body incorporates the stent. It has tissue that grows around the stent. Now, when we have clot in a leg, that's a different animal again. We're trying in the deep veins. Sometimes we try to remove that clot, and we certainly want to apply a compression hose, but let's assume we're speaking about a big clot, a lot of symptoms from it, tremendously swollen leg, and we remove the clot, then we typically would put that patient not on antiplatelet drugs, but on anticoagulants. Now, all of us have heard of the anticoagulant heparin,
right,
or Coumadin that people take long-term for problems like atrial fibrillation. And we would want to, with deep vein thrombosis, treat with a true anticoagulant, including some of the new anticoagulants. So we now have what are called DOACs, or direct oral anticoagulants. And these can be taken by mouth. They're not affected if you eat greens. They're not affected if you take antibiotics like Coumadin would be, because Coumadin is a vitamin K antagonist. Mm-hmm. If you eat greens, the vitamin K makes it not work so well. And if you take antibiotics, the bacteria in our gut get killed, and they're responsible for absorbing the vitamin K. And in that case, you may not have enough vitamin K, and so they may make you bleed. Well, the direct oral anticoagulants, three of them are factor 10A inhibitors, and they behave sort of like heparin. These stop the conversion of prothrombin into thrombin, and that sets off the clotting cascade. And so those are 10A inhibitors. The other direct oral anticoagulant is actually a direct antithrombin drug. And so these work and can stop more clot propagation. Historically, when we see symptomatic deep vein thrombosis, or if a patient has had a pulmonary embolus, ideally, we thought you should treat these patients for 3 to 6 months. There was a trial called Einstein, which looked at rivaroxaban. And rivaroxaban, which is called Xarelto, was continued for 6 months. And this showed that one was much less likely to have that clot come back if you did that. But that trial was extended, and that was called Einstein Choice when it was continued. And it was continued out to a year. And we learned something from this trial. We learned that people are still at risk even beyond that 6 months. And so perhaps that drug should be continued out to 1 year. It's a relatively easy drug to take. It's a drug one takes once a day. Mm-hmm. It's not affected if you take antibiotics or if you eat greens of any sort. That's one of the problems we've always had with Coumadin. People like some of those foods. People sometimes get a cold and they start medicines, and their blood can become too thin or not thin enough, if you would, in terms of likelihood of clotting. And so I do like these factor 10As and direct thrombin inhibitors.
Do patients have to come in and have their blood checked when they're on these medications, much like a Coumadin clinic?
No, they don't have to have blood tests looking at the degree of anticoagulation, mm-hmm. because it's fairly standard. But they still, because these are blood thinners, mm-hmm. they still have to be more careful if they have any bleeding to notify us of that, to make sure that they don't take in too much alcohol, which can irritate the stomach and hurt the stomach. And so if they see any signs of bleeding, we certainly need to see those patients right away.
Right.
And there is an agent which can reverse the activity of the factor 10A drugs, the inhibitors of 10A. And so we can indeed treat that, but it is a blood thinner, and we have to be careful with all blood thinners because they can make you bleed. And so, but on the other hand, they can save your life by stopping a clot, which can be thrown to the lung and can kill you. So that's clot in the deep veins. And we've talked about the stents when we have to use those in either the vena cava or the iliac veins. Now, when we treat superficial veins are the more common problem that we see. That is a much shorter recovery time. Mm-hmm. We're making only a very small entry into the vein. It's superficial. It's not deep. The likelihood of bleeding from those is incredibly low. And so we typically just hold pressure for a very short period of time. They're not on blood thinners. We're closing those veins. Therefore, the pressure in them is extremely low after that. And we then apply a pressure dressing and a compression hose. And we have a patient wear that for a couple days. There are no medicines to take after that. If a patient feels discomfort after that, then it's typically from the retained coagulum, or the blood that had remained in the vein before, as we shut this down. And I have people apply warm compresses to the leg or take an anti-inflammatory drug, something like Aleve gel caps or an Advil gel caps. those types of drugs. Being careful to take those with food so that they're less likely to irritate the stomach and cause any problems. Typically, that is a very, very fast recovery period. In fact, I had one of my varicose veins in my leg treated, and I actually worked the very same day. I didn't have any recovery period. So that has a very, very short recovery period, and there are no long-term medicines that we use for that. Now, we do advise people, when possible, if they're going to be standing for long periods of time, to still wear compression hose, because that helps to prevent recurrence of disease. And then the last of those things that we typically treat
right.
are the perforator veins, which we've just had a session on. And the perforator vein treatment is a superficial vein. And so it behaves very much, just like I've mentioned for the varicose veins. In fact, at the end of that procedure, we simply apply pressure, that bleeding stops. Now, we typically are doing that because a patient has a big venous ulcer. We then encourage the patients to treat that venous ulcer area with things which kill the germs, just, you know, antiseptic type measures that are not irritating to the skin, that don't hurt the skin, just to stop any infection from getting there. And once again, the standard other things, leg elevation, calf pump exercises to move the blood a little bit more. But in both of those last two things that I've spoken, the varicose veins and the perforators, the patient actually walks out of the office and there's really very, very, very short recovery period. And some experience that pain, which is usually very short. They describe it as aching. I have had a couple patients have pain that lasted longer. That's incredibly rare, though. That's in thousands of patients. Mm-hmm.
Let's also touch on the patients that have had those treatments that the goal was to alleviate an ulcer. How would that be addressed once they leave the office?
Sure. Well, whenever we perform a procedure for a patient who has a venous ulcer, mm-hmm. we always see that patient back the next week. We perform an ultrasound to make sure that vascular bed is closed appropriately. We speak with the patient. We look at these ulcers, and we look to see many things. We want to see, is it weeping still? If it's weeping fluid, then we know that that's a problem. We still have high pressures there that we want to deal with. And once again, we ask the patient to, you know, keep their legs elevated for periods in the day to decrease those pressures. And we look at this. But often, as soon as we've done these procedures, we start to see in that next week that those wound beds are dry and they're starting to heal. And if they're really huge wounds and they're now dry, we don't have the pressure, then sometimes we'll have people apply these skin substitutes that have been created. Those can come from many sources. These can use amniotic membrane. These are from placentas mm-hmm. of C-section deliveries in a hospital. And historically, those were just burned after and not used. And yet these are substances that have tremendous healing properties. And so that can really incorporate very well. We can use other things. There are some skin substitutes that are made from fish mm-hmm. skin. And again, these are incorporated very quickly. And they may take a very, very large ulcer that can be as big as 5 or 6 inches across. And once these are incorporated in a fairly short period of time, can really help these ulcers heal. But if you just simply place those while there's still high pressure, mm-hmm. they typically will not take and will not close the ulcer bed.
Interesting. Is there any other areas that we have not covered in terms of post-procedure? I think we've...
Yeah. Well, obviously, all patients are encouraged to continue a walking program.
Right.
And weight loss is very important in these patients. Being obese is an independent risk factor for having bigger problems with one's veins.
Right. I just want to finish by saying this is a very thorough look into venous disease and treatments, and then what is to be done once the patient leaves the practice, the frequency in which they're checked, and then the ongoing preventive measures that need to take place to make sure other areas don't get in the shape that that brought them there in the first place.
You know, Terry, many of my vein patients tell me that this is transformational. And I would say that they're amongst the most thankful of all my patients. Now, keep in mind, I work in the heart and I do procedures that save lives when people are coming in with no blood pressure and are having heart attacks and other problems such as that. I work on carotid arteries, which supply blood to the brain and, you know, in an effort to lessen strokes. I do work in people whose blood supply to the legs is cut off, and I do an awful lot of that work. But I think venous ulcer patients are maybe the most thankful of all patients, and there's a reason for that. They've really felt like their symptoms were ignored, and it's a problem that lasts so long. Imagine a problem that may persist with you 30 years. Most of us can't comprehend that duration of an illness, which bothers you on a daily basis. Every time you look at the leg, you see an ulcer, it's weeping, you're changing bed sheets. And that's why I think veins really deserve tremendous attention. Venous disease is more common than diabetes, far more common than heart disease or peripheral arterial disease. And it's one of the most costly disease processes of all in the Medicare database. So we certainly have to do a better job with these diseases.
That is well said. I mean, it's kind of like the difference between saving someone's life to essentially making their life worth living. So I really appreciate all the information. This has been a wonderful kind of wrap up to the session. Next week, we'll be tackling some new areas. So be sure and check in on us. And thank you for listening to Cardiovascular Matters. If some of the subjects here apply to you or one of your loved ones, get a hold of Dr. Walker. It's very easy at www.cardio.com. Pull up their website, which they actually just refreshed in the last week. And it's very easy to use. You can scroll down. You can make appointments with him. His area down there in Houma, Louisiana, is very easy to get to, just south of New Orleans. And they've got a wonderful facility. It'll blow your mind. So anyway, don't forget www.cardio.com. This is Terry Roberts signing off for Cardiovascular Matters.
Thanks for listening. And please subscribe, like, and share this podcast with your friends and family. Join us next week for new topics and answers with Dr. Craig Walker and Terry Roberts on Cardiovascular Matters.